So I'm Steve, I'm Director of Marketing and Communications here at the College. I'm a marketer, I've been doing this for about 18, 19 years in an education setting, so hopefully I kind of know roughly where I am and what I'm doing, but I've also seen how marketing and promotions has changed over that time. So we're going to spend a little bit of time thinking about social media and how that relates to what we might consider to be more traditional marketing methods as well. If you've got questions, we can hopefully have a little bit of time at the end for it, but if there's a burning question that you want to ask straight away, just wave at me and we can deal with that then and there for you. I guess the key thing for me really is that social media, from our perspective as a brand and as a business, is part of the toolkit that we will use to promote the college's products and services to our target audiences. Is part of that toolkit. It's an important part for some reasons that we'll come on to in a minute, but it has to sit alongside everything else that we're doing. So we do a lot of social media marketing, but we also do a lot of traditional marketing. Now, when I say traditional marketing, what sort of things do you think I'm talking about?
Billboards,
yeah, good example. Anything else?
Signs and buses.
Buses, yeah. Hopefully you've seen some of those recently because we've got a lot of those out at the moment. And bus stops as well. Any others?
TV ads,
yeah. Radio as well. Anything else? No? Okay, but think about those things that we just talked about. Think about the bus stops, the bus sides. Think about radio, TV, newspapers as well. And then just, I'll give you a minute, in twos or threes, just with the people that you're sitting with, what advantages can I get as a business for promoting through social media as opposed to some of those traditional channels? What do you think the differences are? Okay, so I'll just give you a couple, just a minute, twos or threes. Okay, just another 20 seconds or so. Okay, if we come back together then, so for me as a business, what are some of the advantages that I might get through social media marketing as opposed to those traditional methods? Just throw some stuff out.
More people.
Sorry, I've got cheaper here.
More people our age.
More people our age, yeah. So by that, we're talking about targeting, aren't we? Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. Absolutely. So we can go in, we can target on behaviour as well as demographics. Yeah.
You get a lot more sort of like analytics and things like that.
We get some really good analytics from it that we don't get from those offline channels, that's right. Yep. Take one more. Anyone burn into something?
Social media is more like not worldwide, but the traditional ones are more local than
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we can kind of summarise some of those thoughts with this slide. I think we've got most of it. We talked about the fact that we can reach out to specific people. So we can target based on the demographic. So we can target based on how old you are. We can target based on gender. We can target based on geographically where you are. We talked about the limited audience, which I think was the point that came through at the end there. With some of those more traditional media, we can advertise on a bus route, but that's got a very limited scope in terms of who might see it, but also it's got a bit of a wide scope because we can't actually control who, from an age point of view, will be seeing it as well. So if I'm trying to target 15-year-olds to come to our open events, if I put something on the side of a bus, some 15-year-olds might see it, but they might not. Whereas if I go in through digital channels and through social media marketing, I can pretty much guarantee that my messages are going to get to the people that I need to see them. With the last group, we picked up on this point a little bit. So with social media, it's a lot more versatile. If we put something together this morning and then something happens at lunchtime, which means our message has to change, we can change that message straight away. We haven't got there's no lead-in time to get things changed. Everything is very immediate, as we say at the bottom here, rather than delayed. So if we were going to take a newspaper ad out, for example, we have to have our artwork back to the newspaper probably 7 to 10 days prior to the publication date for it to be included. If we take those bus ads, the bus ads that are out now, we booked April or May time. So actually, there's a huge lead-in time for these, which means that we can't be as immediate. Yes, we can decide probably about 6 weeks beforehand, before the buses go live, what the message actually is. But in terms of that process of actually procuring it and getting the message confirmed, we've got massive lead-in time, whereas with social media, you know, we might say today, we want to run some extra human resources courses starting in January. We've got the ability, we can start promoting that today. It's absolutely immediate. It's a real advantage for us over those traditional ones. And we mentioned price as well. I think it was one of the first things that we came on to. We'll touch on price again in a minute, but the traditional media is ludicrously expensive. So you won't hear a lot of us on the radio anymore. Does anyone actually listen to the radio? Do you listen to like KMFM or Heart Kent or anything like that? No one compared to own up to it anyway. No? So that for me, you know, that's enough for me to say I don't need to look at that again. We stopped doing it because our research was saying that people of your age weren't listening to it. So we stopped, and you're not. So that reinforces why that decision was correct for me, really. In terms of helping you to build your case study, I just want to flesh out a few of those points for you with a little bit more detail. We've talked about targeting, and we've talked about what we can do with that. Retargeting. If I were to say retargeting, what do you think I mean by that?
You're doing
the same audience again. Yep, exactly. So based on cookies that will be put into your browser when you come onto our website or into our social media channels, we can effectively, we know that you're a warm lead. You've seen some of our content, you've engaged with it, so the algorithms that flood through Facebook will recognise that and we'll keep serving our content to you. We can come back to you, we can serve you with adverts based on the fact that you've been to our profiles previously as well. So really useful tactic for us. Best way I can have of describing that is a few years ago I was looking to buy a cross trainer. So I researched cross trainers, ended up looking at this particular one on the Argos website, and then everywhere I went for the next week or so, I was getting these banner ads for this cross trainer that I could buy from Argos because it put a cookie in and it was just following me around the whole time. So we use it because if people have already engaged with us effectively, for us they're a warm lead that we want to keep pursuing. We have a big goal, which is to drive traffic to our website. We do that for two reasons. One is because all of the specific information about our products, so our study programs, is available on our website. We want people to go there, we want people to find out more about them. But secondly, you can only apply for our study programs on the website as well. So, I mean, if you think of any other business, what we're doing, we're taking a lead, we want them to go to the place where we can actually make a sale. So we want you on our website because that's where you apply for your program. If I don't get you there, then you're not going to apply. You won't be able to apply. There's no other route. So it's really key for us to drive traffic into the website. It gives us the opportunity to put shareable stuff out there. So hopefully if we've done our research properly and we're producing the right kind of content, you'll be liking it, you'll be sharing it. Other people in your network are going to be seeing it, which effectively gives the college your endorsement. Okay, so that actually is really helpful for us. So we will use social media to produce that kind of shareable content. We'll also try and express a little bit of our personality, and you'll see this with a lot of brands. If you go to a brand website, it can be fairly corporate, fairly formal, fairly dry, and doesn't actually express much of what it is to be part of that organisation. So, you know, our website is equally that. Its primary importance is to give you course information and to let you apply for it. It's going to be fairly dry. Make no apologies for that. But we'll use our social media profiles to just give a little bit of a feel for actually what it's like to study here, what it's like to work here as well. So we can just flesh out that personality a little bit, which helps us build relationships. Because we can track, actually, people that come into our website that have come from our social media profiles, so followed that route in, we can track what their behaviour is when they come into the website, and we can see the proportion of those that will go on to convert and submit an application, as opposed to those who just come straight into the website. So we know that if they just come to the dry formal bit, yeah, they'll apply, but we've got much better chance of getting them to apply if we've built a bit of a relationship through social media before they come in. We have the opportunity to influence as well, so you know, we'll produce what we hope is fairly fun and creative stuff that people will like looking at and seeing, but we've got the ability to influence our customers and potential customers at that point as well. We can provide information through our social channels about what your options are post-16, whether you're going to stay at school, whether you're going to go to college, whether you're going to go on to an apprenticeship. We've got the opportunity to feed all of that in and try and influence what people's decisions are. We do generate a little bit of media coverage from social media as well. It's not the holy grail that it used to be for any brand, really. You know, you always wanted that positive reaffirmation of having a story in the paper. We don't need that anymore. We can publish our own stories through social media on the web. So we don't hanker after that sort of stuff, but it's nice when it happens. And it happened for us, I think it was this, yeah, last year. So we run our Study Smart campaign between Easter and June. Which is exam tips, revision tips, the kind of stuff to make sure you're eating properly, you're getting enough sleep, that kind of stuff. And we give information to parents about how they can support the young people through exams as well. And that got picked up by the Kent Messenger Group, who ran a story which we were featured in. And we were seen as this education thought leader, which is exactly where we're trying to position ourselves. So it's a nice byproduct of what we do on social media. We use it for customer feedback and response as well. So, you know, we'll hear directly from our customers. They might send us a direct message in Twitter. They might do it in Facebook. They could do it anywhere. They may comment on a piece of content that we've posted. Could be anything really. But we get that direct feedback. And we've got the opportunity to respond to that feedback as well. I'll come on to how important it is to respond in just a moment. It's free to set up, which is really important for a business, especially if you're a startup. You know, I think you've already started building business pages, haven't you, I think? Yeah? So it doesn't cost anything if you're a business to go in and set those pages up, but it does cost money to develop those and produce the right amount, produce the right content for it as well. So, for example, while we might be able to set up those channels for free, Natalie, who's here with me today, actually looks after all of those social media profiles for us. And Natalie, despite me begging, refuses to work for free. So there is a cost associated to you having a brand's social media presence. Okay, so it's free to set up, but it's not free to sustain it. In terms of what you do with your advertising, it is relatively low cost compared to some of those other traditional media that we looked at earlier on. And I think someone made the point, forgive me, I can't remember who said it, but it's really easily measured as well. I think it was the chap at the back here. You know, most social media platforms will have an analytics package that sits in the back of them, so you can see quite easily how your content is performing. And then we cross-check that by looking at Google Analytics to see what kind of traffic we're getting fed into the website from those channels. So really easy to measure, really easy to check the effectiveness of it as well. There's a caveat at this point, which is that social media is one of those things that's always changing. It's just a snapshot today of some of the social media channels that you might be able to set up your brand profile on. You might recognise most of those. Some of those I'm not even sure I recognise. But the whole thing is very transient. It's shifting all of the time. And you will come across some people who will say, well, if you're going to have a business profile on social media, you've got to cover them all. And I'm going to tell you today that's rubbish. You don't need to be on all of them. You'd be on the ones that your customers are using. So if you've done your research properly, which you should be doing for any kind of marketing campaign, you should know who you're trying to reach, what the messages are that you're trying to reach them with, and where you're going to reach them. And, you know, we've just said it, haven't we? What's the point of me running a radio campaign if no one here listens to KMFM or to Heart? Because they're the radio stations that are calling us three times a day to try and sell us airtime. It's the same with social media. There is absolutely no point us engaging in a social media platform where you aren't. So, you know, we will use Twitter, we'll use Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. We won't go anywhere near Google Plus. We did for a while, but frankly, no one else seems to bother using it, so why should we? It's not a place where we think we can reach you, so we're not going to engage in it. So, actually, being quite selective about it is really important. And you're selection of those is based on research. Now you can do primary research. We, you know, we've just done some, haven't we? I've asked you whether you listen to the radio. You've told me no. There's primary research, which says, Steve, actually, stay away from radio because there's no point. So you can do that primary research with your customer base, but there's plenty of secondary research available as well. This is the, obviously the highlight of my summer every year, which is Ofcom's annual communications report. And what that will do is break down by age who's doing what online. Now, it covers a little bit of offline as well, but obviously, as we said, that's harder to measure. So this tends to focus more on what's going on online and more on some attitudinal stuff about how people watch TV and that kind of stuff. But from here, I will be able to see a breakdown of 14 to 19s, I think is the category that I look at, and I will be able to see, okay, well, this is the proportion of 14 to 19s who've got a smartphone, how proportionate have got a tablet, how much time they spend on that those devices each day, what they're doing on those tablets, what they're doing on those devices. If they're watching video, what kind of video are they watching? How much traditional TV are they watching compared to how much streamed TV they're watching through services like Netflix? I can see all of that through a report like this. So there's plenty of primary research that you can do and secondary research that you can access to make sure that you're doing the kind of stuff that will help you to reach your potential audiences. So once we've worked out who our customers are, once we've worked out which channels they're using, we need to think about what kind of content are we going to produce for them. And all of your content will fall into one of three categories. Okay, so we've got owned social. Now that's talking about the channels that we've put together. So if we've set up a brand page, or if we've set up a brand Twitter bio, that's owned social media for us. It's our channel, we control it, and we talk about the things that we want to talk about as a brand on it, and our customers respond to us on it. That's owned. The second one is paid. We're going to come on to a little bit more about paid in a minute. But for paid social, it's the content that we or any other brand are paying to appear on your Twitter stream or your Facebook timeline, whatever it may be, but we are paying for it to be there because we want you to see it. And the third is earned media, which is, if I say user-generated content, are you familiar with that phrase? Yeah, so that's stuff that essentially you might produce and you might share on your own profiles, which relates to our brand. So it's conversations that people are having about our business, which aren't taking place on the channels that we control. So, for example, if you got a fantastic new piece of network racking in the department and you were so excited you wanted to take a photo of it and share it on your social media profiles, you might want to. That's earned media for us. So you're going out, you're doing it, you're sharing it. We're not doing anything, but all we've done is provide you with the experience and the resources that have made you want to effectively be an ambassador for the college. So really important for us. And that's the one that actually we would like to grow, because there's nothing more powerful than you guys being ambassadors for the college, going out and telling people about your experiences there, telling people that you're working with the latest piece of the kit, going out to your employers when you leave here and knowing your way around whatever infrastructure that you're working with. That's really important for us. We can't buy that. Any fool can pay for some advertising with a credit card. But what you do in terms of going out from here and telling people about what you do here is absolutely priceless for us. I said I'd come back to paid very briefly. This is a story that you may or may not have seen last week, but Facebook are actually trialling some stuff overseas at the moment in a few countries. And that, you know, it's nothing that we're overly worried about at this stage, because they're trialling different things all over the place at any given point in time. But this one basically is saying, with your feed, even if you like our stuff and you engage with our stuff, which means that its algorithms will want to serve you more of our stuff, this trial will basically strip out any brand content from your timeline unless I pay for it to be there. So, you know, if you take any given brand that you like and follow, unless they pay for their content to be in your feed, you're not going to see it. Which is a bit troubling for us as marketers. You know, we like to produce content that we hope will get you engaged and will keep you coming back. But obviously Facebook's a business, this is their business model, to try and extract as much of our marketing budget as they can get their hands on, and they're going to do that. So we'll watch and wait, but increasingly as a brand, that kind of cost effectiveness, you know, it is very cost effective at the moment to market and promote through social media, that's going to change slightly over time, and I think it will become more expensive for us to do that. Again, in terms of content, this is a report that was published in over the summer in June. This is what people like me expect to be investing most in over the next year or so. So there are some things in here which were really no surprise to us. So we know that our video content and the visual stuff that we produce, whether that be an infographic or a meme or a GIF, tends to get more engagement, more reaction from people than if we just put a plain text tweet out. Okay, so Natalie is monitoring this all the time, and we know that we'll get more engagement from visual stuff. The surprises for me really were that live video wasn't higher. So we've got 60% are going to be investing time and budget in producing live video this year, or we thought that would be a bit higher. Podcasting, when was the last time anyone listened to a podcast? Sorry, I heard something. No? Okay, but there you go. So for us, I mean, globally, marketers are spending less time producing podcasts now, and again, you've just told me that there's no point in me even bothering going anywhere near it because you're not going to listen to them. So we'll use information like this to decide which kinds of content we should be producing. As I say, no surprise for us on the video and visual stuff, because we kind of knew that was the case anyway. But the good news that we have got is that for people like me who aren't graphic designers, there are plenty of tools around that can help you produce decent-looking visual content and decent-looking video for relatively low cost. So there are a few sites that Natalie uses. One of them is Canva, canva.com. And that effectively is drag and drop design. So, you know, if you put me in front of an Adobe software package, after 3 weeks I might be able to produce something reasonably passable, but if you put me in front of Canva, I can produce something which we'd be happy to publish within 10 minutes. So there's some really, really good tools that are available for us to do that. In terms of our video, most of our video we film on iPad minis. We just take them out, set them up on a tripod and take a microphone with us. And then we'll edit those, normally in free apps that you can get from the iTunes store. So it's really easy for us to produce that kind of content these days, and it's reasonably cheap as well. Absolutely key in all of this is that you need to know what your goals are. So I said earlier on that our goal is to get people onto our website, and I explained why. Your goal for whatever business you might work for in the future might be completely different. You might be using social media to achieve completely different things, and that's fine, as long as you know what it is you're trying to achieve. If you don't know what you're trying to achieve, how are you going to know whether or not it was effective? You know, we talked about analytics earlier on and the fact that we can track everything. You're going to get lost in analytics, aren't you? It's huge. How many people have spent any decent amount of time in Google Analytics? Yeah, got one specialist in the corner here. So, but it's a bit of a rabbit hole, isn't it? You can just get lost in it for days.
We haven't gone in depth with it yet, but we will be going in depth with it.
So you can get absolutely lost in that. Unless you know what you're looking for, which you'll only know if you've set yourself some goals, then the whole thing's fruitless, isn't it? There's absolutely no point. You can spend days hunting around in Google Analytics and you still won't know whether you're performing well or not because you don't know what you're measuring against. So, you know, we know what our core messages are. We've done our research. We've established what we want to achieve with that. One of our goals, as I've said, is getting people to the website. We can monitor how effectively that's happening. So we know what kind of return on our investment we're getting from the work we do in social media. If you haven't got goals, you will have no idea whether you're wasting your time or not. And because we've got goals, we've got some structure around what we do. We know, as I say, what those key messages are. We know how we're going to track it. We've got structure there. If you haven't got goals and you haven't got structure, you'll find your channel goes all over the place and can become really ad hoc and reactive, and that can be pretty problematic as well. So we're planners, unashamedly. We want as much planned in advance as possible. We'll always have at least 2 weeks' worth of content planned in and scheduled to go, but we'll extend that further wherever we can as well, because not planning is fraught with risk. And we'll come on to that in a second. In fact, let's do it now. So as great as social media is to people like me who want to get those messages out, it can be a bit of a minefield as well. Why do you think that might be? Why would I say there are health risks associated with it from a brand perspective?
It might damage your reputation.
Yeah, reputation's everything. Anything else? Okay, that's fine. We'll take reputation. It is a big, it probably covers everything else. So, yeah, damage to your reputation is just, the potential for it's enormous. And every interaction that you have on social media as a brand is rife with risk in terms of what your reputation will be, because it's all played out in the public eye. Now, one person owned up to this in the last group, but we got any great British Bake Off fans in the room? Like I said, there was only one in the last group. Anyone going to confess? No? Okay, well, you can keep your little secret for a little bit longer. But if you watched any of the stories that unfolded last week, one of the judges on the Great British Bake Off revealed the result of the final before the episode had been aired. And if you believe some of the storm that was around that, then as a result, they might not be a judge on the next series. They might have effectively lost their job as a result of doing that. Because everything that you do is played out in public. So, you know, every piece of content you might put out that gets a negative comment back, it's all out there for everyone to see. Any piece of criticism that you might get, you know, if we go back to that earned content example earlier on, if you're working on a network back here and the thing falls apart and you take a photo of that, that's massively damaging for our reputation as well. So every interaction on social media is rife with risk. Now, we think the benefits outweigh the risk, which is why we're still there. But it is inherently risky, really. You'll hear some people say that with that kind of negative stuff and with the potentially reputation-damaging stuff, you should do one of three things. You should either fight it and bite back and prove to someone that they're wrong. You should forget it and just ignore it and pretend it never happened. Or you should flood your social media streams with other content, which will hopefully just push it completely off the radar. We don't subscribe to any of those models. Okay? If someone has taken the trouble to contact us, if they need to get something off their chest, if they've got a problem, our view is that we'll try and do something about that. We won't ignore it. If our customers want to tell us something, we'll listen and we'll try and change stuff as a result of it. So you'll see on our channels, I would say very rarely, but very rarely is not even the case, we will never ignore anything. We'll never delete anything. If it's there, we'll respond to it. What we might try and do is take that conversation into a private discussion, okay? Because actually there might be things that we need to ask and responses that you might want to give that will help us fix that problem for you that you might not want to raise publicly. So we'll take that offline to protect you, and we'll try and help to resolve that problem. But we'll never just ignore it, we'll never just delete it. In terms of what you can do to mitigate the risk, there are three things really. One is that you need to recognise that the people managing your social media profiles are probably marketers. They're probably not your customer service team as a brand or a business. You've probably got a dedicated team that are looking after all of that customer facing stuff, and your marketing team isn't it. So you need to make sure that your marketing team or whoever's looking after those channels have got some basic customer service skills, and that they know where to go to get the answers to what can be quite specific problems. So, for example, we might get an animal care student send us a private message on Twitter, which will say, I've got a problem with my timetable. We won't be able to fix that. We won't know about that. We don't manage timetables on behalf of the college, but what we should know is who do we need to talk to get that response so we can go back to the customer, or who do we need to introduce that person to help them resolve their query. So that's the first thing. Secondly, you need to be alert to what's going on in the wider world. So, for example, we have a policy that any time there's a major incident with major loss of life, such as some of the incidents we had over the summer, we will silence our social media channels. We'll just stop them completely. Any scheduled content that we've got, we'll stop it going out. We'll go absolutely silent, because from a reputation point of view, there's nothing worse for us than this major incident I'm playing and we're sharing some funny little video that, you know, for all intents and purposes, is just really inappropriate at that point. So you need to be aware of what's going on in the wider world. Did you want to share your example of that as well?
Yeah, just referring back to your case study where we talked about, I think it was Amazon, that decided that they were going to put a post up about sort of hurricane deals or something like that. You know, we're going to be ahead of the hurricane, we're going to do free delivery. And it was a couple of hours later that the devastation of one of the massive Category 5 hurricanes had caused lots of death and carnage, that they got that negativity against them. It is on my YouTube site, so we put the example up on. But we went over that a few weeks ago. So Suzanne, you've got to be thoughtful about what you can post. If something in the world's going on, it might not necessarily be in the best place, and could have a negative effect on you as a company and brand.
Yeah, thank you. I said there were three things. So we're aware that our customers are using it as a customer service channel. We're conscious of what's going on in the wider world. And the third thing is that we need to have some controls over what our staff are doing with their own social media profiles as well. Because, okay, we look after the college's corporate channels, but you know, my own Twitter feed, although I've got that nice little caveat that everyone thinks will get them out of trouble in terms of views on my own, if people can associate me with the college, then what I do with my social media feed reflects on the college. So actually it's sensible, and I think you'll cover this in your unit as well, to have a social media policy which just clarifies what your behavioural expectations are of your staff when they're using social media personally as well, because that can have a massive impact, again, on your reputation. What your staff do reflects on your brand and reflects on your business. So, that doesn't have to be something vile, or it doesn't have to be that kind of thing, but it could be a breach of copyright, for example. So, if someone's trying to pass off some research as their own, it's plagiarism. What kind of message does that send about us as a college? So, you've got to have those considerations too. So when you look at those policies, they're really important. Final bit, really. I said that we do a lot of planning. That planning has four phases to it, really. So we talked a lot about research. Research is where it all starts. There's no point us going out and doing anything on social media if we don't start with some thorough research. That involves taking who your audience is, what messages they're likely to respond to, what kind of content they're likely to respond to, which social media channels they're using. All of those things that we've talked about all the way through over the last half an hour all come together under research. We'll then take some time to plan it. I've already said we'll plan at least 2 weeks in advance, more if we can, because we know what the college calendar is like. We know, for example, that at this time of year, 15-year-olds in year 11 are looking at what their study options are for next September. So we can schedule all of our content around that. So we'll make the plan. That plan will be detailed. It will be, what are we posting? Where are we posting it? Who's producing it? What time of day are we going to post it? Because you can get all of that research from your analytics as well in terms of the time of day that your potential customers are going to engage with you. And then we'll put that plan into action. We'll do it. So we've got research, plan, do, and our final stage is to review. We'll use analytics platforms that sit within the social media channels and Google Analytics. We'll look at things like the footfall that we get from our open events. We had the first one in Maidstone last week. Are we getting our intended outcomes from the investment that we're putting into these things? So we track all of that stuff through, we'll review it all, and then we'll make decisions about what we'll do differently next time as a result of that. My final point really is everything you do with social media as a brand, keep bringing it back to the needs of your customers. We could have a hoop doing all kinds of stuff, but at the end of the day, we're not there to entertain ourselves. We're there to get some messages over to our customers. We'll trial things, we'll play around with things, we'll try and innovate, but if those things don't engage our target audience, we'll scrap them and we'll go ahead with things that do. So it all comes back to what your customers want from you. Okay, any questions? No? Getting away lightly.
You are. I'll ask one that came up in the other group. Has the college had any fails from a social media point of view?
Yeah, and I'll give the same answer that I gave in the last one, which is from the outside you might think it was a fail, but from our point of view it did what we needed it to do. So how many of you were here last Christmas? Yeah? So you might remember then that last Christmas we had a video that we posted to Twitter and Facebook, incredibly cheesy, really sad, swelling, Adele-like music in the background, shots of an empty college, we miss you, come back to college, remember it? It was terrible, but it was deliberately terrible. So from the outside it looked like a massive fail, but actually what we were trying to do is give something really provocative, which people would not, it got absolutely slammed. My notifications were going nuts on New Year's Day, like by the thousands of people that were reacting to it. It did get absolutely slammed, but it was designed to be cheesy, it was designed to be crap, because we just wanted people to notice it, to watch it, and to get that message that started on the 3rd of January. And it worked. So, from the outside, it looked like a fail, but we knew there was a vulnerability, I'll be with you in just a second, we knew there was a vulnerability with people not coming back to college on the first day of term. So we did something that was deliberately designed to be cheesy and crap, and to get people's attention. Now, we'll learn from that. We'll do something similar this year, but it won't be as cheesy as we did last year, just because I quite like a day off on New Year's Day, and I didn't really get one. Is that right? Yep.
Yeah, that was me.
We'll learn from it. So, we've already got some ideas, but it won't be cheesy. Well, I say that, it might be cheesy. But hopefully not as profit-inducing as last year's.
Any other questions?
Why don't you do live videos anymore? We do. We tend to only do them from the open events. So the last ones we did, I think probably were our last open events in March. We're scheduling at the moment, we'll be doing some on Thursday night from the open event here. Because the open event last week was our first one of this season, if you like, we didn't have the time. There were too many other logistical things going into that event for us to take someone out of the equation and say, you get on with that. But from this week onwards, we will be doing it. Actually, we'd like to see more. What I'd like to do, because you've seen some of the other ones, obviously, yeah, so unfortunately it tends to be me. And I'm trying to get others from the team involved in sort of hosting those videos as well. But what I'd like to do is take them away from being those kind of more structured things that we do at open events. I'd like to come into the classroom. I'd like to do some from a class with current students, that kind of thing. You don't want me to come to this one, no? But we will do more of it. I think it's just again, we need to know what the purpose is, and the reason we'll do it around the time of year that we've got the open events is because we want to hit all of the people that can't make it to the open event for one reason or another. For last week's in Maidstone, we know some of the schools, probably about four or five of the schools were still on half term because they decided to have a 2-week half term instead of one. So we were a bit worried about the numbers that would get along to that. That kind of consideration, I think last year we had problems with the town centre traffic in Maidstone where they were doing the one-way system. It's those kind of things that drive us to doing it, because we've then got a way to reach those who can't come along to the event. But I'd like to do more of it. It's a good question.
Can I ask why you are? Did you
particularly
like watching?
No, I just saw one. It was so
structured.
It was really
terrible.
Oh, okay. Which one was it?
The one on opening day. You were standing on the top of the pavilion.
Yeah.
And you're just standing there answering questions.
Who was I talking to?
I don't know.
Is that the one, Ashley?
Quite possibly. Was it recent?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it would have been Ashley. Again, they're structured because there are specific things that we want to get across in those.
Yeah, but if you want to appeal to a younger audience, you know, younger people in
there. I absolutely agree, which is why I want to come into the classroom system. But you've got to remember, just one thing on that. I mean, we do that on Facebook Live, and the other reason why we have some structure around it is because we actually get a lot of parents and lots of family members who follow us on Facebook as well. So it's fair enough saying I need to do stuff that's less formal, but I'm trying to hit two different audiences at the same time with that, which is tricky.
Something to think about as maybe a strategy that you could talk to Steve about,
yeah,
to try and maybe get both sides. The other group, somebody in there mentioned about hacking.
Yep.
Has the social media ever been hacked for college?
We've been hacked once, and it was an inside job. So it was. We have a search engine optimization partner, an external company that we used to do that. We changed the company we were using for that, and a disgruntled member of staff from the former business decided that they would do some inappropriate stuff with our channels. So obviously we picked up on that, locked it down, within the measures that we've taken, there are certain things that you can only do from within the college network now. So even for me to update the website, I've got VPN links in, which effectively, when I'm changing it, I can't do it from home, but I can do it by remoting into the college network.
Any other questions? What's the content-wise? What's the most successful content? Are you, like images, text, videos? What are you finding is the gives you the most penetration?
Yeah, I mean, we get it from the visual stuff. So if it's memes, GIFs, video, that will always get better impact for us than just straight text. Absolutely no doubt. And we do get some benchmarks as well. So, you know, we talked about the analytics stuff that we can use. There is a company called EduRank who basically do independent scoring of colleges, schools, universities' social media presence as well. So we do get independent scoring, and we can see how we're performing against other organisations as well.
Sure. Any other questions?
Yeah, we've been trolled.
We do get it occasionally. Yeah, and actually, the last time we really got it was on one of the Facebook Live videos.
How do you reply to it then?
Sorry?
How do you stop it, or do you just ignore it?
We never ignore anything, but what we'll try and do is get that person to engage with us in private discussions rather than doing it live online. You know, we've not had to take the step of blocking someone yet, not in my time here. I wouldn't hesitate to do it if someone was being deliberately obstructive and was trying to sort of hijack all of our content. I wouldn't hesitate for that, but I'd always want to give a genuine customer or a genuine parent of one of our students the opportunity to get a response from us rather than just blocking them straight off. Yep,
I've got them at the weekend, so you don't have a live chat room that.
We've got it, it just hasn't been switched on yet. Okay. Good question. We've got it. It's live on our test site, on our development site. We just haven't rolled it over to the new one yet. So, but yeah, we should have it.
Any more?
You can update the weekend website.
We will at some point, but obviously.